At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Real quick before we start the show, just wanted to let you guys know you can get the show 2 days early by joining our Patreon. Even for a buck, you can listen to the show 2 days early. Go to patreon.com/analogtalk and we got a bunch of stuff over there. Check it out and enjoy the episode.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Analog Talk, a film photography podcast. I'm your host, Tim.
I'm Chris.
And today on the show, we have Brian Burks. Hey, Brian.
Hello.
Hi,
how
Brian.
Are you guys?
Hey.
Good. I was telling Timothy we feel like this is overdue, so thank you for joining us.
Yeah.
But before we get into all the fun stuff, do you mind introducing yourself to our listeners for folks who may not know you and give us a background on how you got into all the fun stuff, all photography?
Yeah. I am a 32-year-old photographer from St. Louis. I got into photography, like really focusing on it in 2019. But I have a background in videography and stuff. My main job is wedding videos. And I went to college for TV and film. And
oh, cool.
I didn't really take college that seriously. I was just really immature. And I just expected to get my degree and then get a job. And it didn't.
Right.
It did not work that way at all.
Yeah. It's funny how that always seems to happen.
Yeah, I just didn't focus on like building relationships and making connections. And I was just like focusing on making work, and that can only get you so far. So when I got out of college, couldn't get a job, ended up working at a gas station for a while as a cashier. And then my roommate at the time his sister was getting married, and I had never done a wedding video before, but I just did it for very cheap, and that kind of kickstarted my whole videography foray. So that's kind of how it all started. And then, yeah, like found film photography in 2019, just watching a Willem video on YouTube.
Wow.
And kind of just fell in love with everything and the process. And now we're here.
Wow. So I have a couple questions right off the bat. Do you now, when you go to a wedding now, are you like, man, I wish I had my 4x5. I wish I could be the photographer. Or are you still like, nah, I'm going to keep the video as what my thing. And like, do you ever want to switch?
We're like 80% video and then 20% photo. The more I've done photography, I've been trying to just switch into that. But
yeah,
with my personality and the way that I go about things, photo is just a whole, it's a lot of coordination and a lot of just being like the orchestrator of everything. And that's kind of not really my personality. So I like doing video and staying back a little bit, but I have used my 4x5 a couple times, but it's just a little too slow for weddings in general.
Oh, yeah,
so,
yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't even think of that. That's great. That makes so much sense, though, that you went to school for video and because you're just like the cinema part of your YouTube channel is what like really drawed me in at the beginning, was just watching. You have so many cool little techniques that I'm a YouTube University kind of person. That's where I learned all my little tips and tricks. So it's always nice to see somebody that has a little structure in their shooting.
Yeah, when I first started, I was was like, everyone was like, oh, you like, you're pretty like, for being a YouTuber who's just started, you're pretty good. What's like, well, yeah, I've been doing this for a while, but
yeah,
now I'm a little bit going back to just being a little bit more basic with everything and not taking it so seriously, just because my channel's a little, I'm doing stuff that doesn't really get views or make money. So I just think to myself, like, I'm putting in so much work with the video aspect and I'm not really getting as much out of it in terms of views or exposure or financial compensation. So kind of been leaning back and just not really worrying so much about the production aspect and just focusing maybe on like the photos and stuff.
I feel like that's the hardest part of doing a YouTube channel on something that you're passionate about, because it kind of locks you in such a little bubble, you know, like the film, even as wide as film photography is, it's still just film photography.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's tough. And then when you do something different, when you're like, I'm going to do a video on a, speaking for me, like a guitar or something, and it's like the people who have signed up to watch me don't want to hear my crappy takes on guitars, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Your last podcast with Robbie, me and him are, I feel like we're the same in our approach to YouTube. The stuff that he makes, he just doesn't really care about algorithms or views, or he just makes what he wants to make. And it really resonates with me, because that's how I want to be with my channel. And you can fall into an easy trap of just making stuff that gets views or gets exposure.
Right.
And I've seen that a lot with people, and I just don't want to do that. And I've never really had to worry about that, because I just have never wanted to do that. But it does make it tough, because obviously I want people to watch my videos.
Right.
I want people
of course,
to enjoy it. But yeah, it's YouTube. I've been up and down with it so many times. It's a roller coaster.
It's really also hard to stay consistent, like, especially, you know, life can get in the way, or like, oh, I don't know if we talked about this on the podcast or not, Timothy, but we were talking about, like, I was super frustrated and was like, I don't want to do Instagram anymore. I don't want to do YouTube anymore.
Oh,
I just want to focus on my photography. Right. And then like, maybe I'll come back with something worthwhile. You know, it's like hard to do both simultaneously, because you'll get lost in like shooting stuff for the audience instead of like for yourself, you know what I mean? And plus, it's mentally exhausting, you know, especially social media these days. It's like, I can't look at this anymore, you know? But then I'll be like, no, I'm going to come back with my YouTube. I'm going to have all these episodes. I'm going to do these reels, and I'm going to be so cool. And it's like, you know, I go back and forth. It's hard.
Yeah, it's really hard. I remember when I got my first sponsor, and they were like, we're going to have you do 4 videos a month. I'm like, I can barely pump out 1 video a month. How can I do 4?
Yeah.
And it's just, then you start making stuff that you don't even want to make, and you're just trying to make sponsor goals. And it's a lot easier now when I can just, the one sponsor I do have, it's 1 video a month. Sometimes I do it, sometimes I don't. I'm just like, I email them and say, I couldn't get a video out. I don't have anything to talk about. So just not going to make it.
Plus, I feel like just like the grand scheme of this whole thing, you know, what is more validating when somebody comes up to you and says, man, Brian, your large format photography, like, I'm so inspired. Or they're like, oh, your last video was like super entertaining. It's like, which one gives you the fuzzies more over the other, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And it, like you said, the grand scheme of things, I try to look at it like, if I were to do YouTube my whole life, there's just no way possible that I could do 50, 60 videos a year. And I just want to look at it like a lifetime thing, and just put out stuff when I feel compelled to, and when I actually have something to talk about.
Plus, we've talked about this a million times on the show. Like, it's a scrapbook. You know,
it's
you'll
a journal.
Be able to show your kids, like, look when I was doing this before you were born, you know, or like, you know, if you travel and like that's my favorite thing. Like, looking back on the travel videos that I made a few years ago, it's like, wow, like, I forgot I went there and I have it on video, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's amazing to see the progression as well, because when I first started my first video, I just said, I'm going to talk about my process. I'm not going to like try to teach people anything or like do tutorials or anything like that. I'm just going to show the whole process and look back on it and just see the progression. So even seeing that's just been pretty cool.
Oh, what a world we live in where we're our own like movie sets that and television shows that we document all this stuff in our lives. It's so crazy. It's so much pressure too, because when I was doing that stuff, and I still have plans to like tackle YouTube again, but I only want to do it when I feel like I have something worthy of talking about or sharing or documenting for myself. I mean, I'm kind of in a pretty boring period of my life being, you know, middle-aged, working a full-time job, like, you know, just doing the normal life thing. So I tend to only pull the camera out or get the phone out when, you know, when there's something special going on. Because I was caught up in it. When I first started doing YouTube, it's almost addicting. It's almost like a like a drug. To think about it's like 100 subscribers, 500 subscribers, I hit 1,000. This is crazy. And it's just like, it's so exciting. And you just want to be a part of it. But then there's so much things like you were saying about, you know, not wanting to do tutorials or stuff like that. Dude, you could do the perfect tutorial explaining everything to a T, perfect, science documented, whatnot. You're still going to have that gang of haters out there that's like, well, he forgot the T. It does have a bulb, though. You put it on T and then you know, it's just, there's always like armchair experts out there that really, really like harsh the mellow. It's like, dude, chill out. Like, it's a YouTube video. You're watching, you know, for fun, and you know, it's just wild. It's crazy.
Luckily I haven't I used to have back in the day, I feel like I would have more negative comments about everything, and I feel like now it's just, I don't really, like I said, the videos I make don't really get out to a wide audience, so it's really just the people that subscribe to me that comment. But I love the fact that the comments that I do get, they're, it's never just like a short thing. It's always something that's very thoughtful, and it's just nice to see that feedback on videos like that.
It's funny, like, anytime I get an email that I have a comment on my videos, I'm like, what are they saying? What are they saying?
Do I want to look?
Oh, yeah, do I want to look? Oh, they said something really nice. Like, that's so sweet. Or whatever. The haters have, I feel like, have died. Hopefully that's just like a general thing across the board. I hope so, because life's too short.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I still
put on people's parades.
Yeah. I still see it all the time on bigger YouTube channels or on Reddit or something like that. But
Reddit. Forget Reddit.
you can't help those people. They're, it's unfixable.
Totally.
It's funny though. Like, I hate seeing that stuff. Like, I hate the shit talking of Reddit, but like, some of the memes are pretty funny. Like, it is funny to scroll it every once in a while until you see your name in there. It's like, oh.
Yeah. I'm too fragile personally.
I would
die if someone did that. So, yeah, props to, like, I saw that Joe Greer was like posting his Halloween outfit meme, and that's just hilarious for me to see that he can actually look at that. And
you have to, otherwise, like, what, like, at some point you have to be like, whatever, I'm gonna keep doing me. Go ahead and make your meme.
Okay,
before you hopped on with us, Brian, I was telling Timothy, I'm like, well, his work makes you want to sell everything and get into large format, so I definitely want to talk to you about your large format portraits. We talked about this with Robbie, how having the courage to go photograph strangers, but you actually like will knock on people's doors, which I find is even more inspiring. But I wanted to ask, like, you know, your car project, is that like, at least I was thinking from like when I was watching that series, I was like, well, this is what I would need to have, like a security blanket or like a shield to like be able to knock on somebody's door and explain, like, this is what I'm doing. This is why I want to do it.
Right.
Instead of like walking up to somebody who's walking their dog and being like, wow, you look great. Like, can I take your picture? I guess, can you just like talk to us about your process on that? And like, are you still terrified every time you knock on somebody's door, or are you kind of like okay with it now? Like, does it scare you?
It's always still a little bit scary. It's definitely like back when I first started, because like you said, it to be able to go up to someone and have a thing or an icebreaker to say is very important.
Yeah.
And I myself, I do it sometimes if I see someone interesting, but I'm not like the type to go up to someone walking on the street and ask them for a portrait. I have done it. And even that's a little nerve-wracking for me. But yeah, like when I first started this, that was just, I was terrified. I would have to take a shot of whiskey before I would go out and do it, just because I needed liquid courage. But having that icebreaker, and as long as you're just honest with people and forefront and tell them exactly what you're doing. And another thing that I like to do is just go up empty handed. I don't have my camera or anything. I'm just talking to them and explaining everything. And one thing that helps me, that this is going to be different for everyone, but I've had a lot of people come up to me before and just say hey, you look like someone I know, or do I know you? Uh-huh. So I feel like I just have a very basic, normal looking face and I look approachable. And it might help too that I live in the Midwest and people are genuinely pretty nice. I've only been a couple different places while this project's been going on. I've been out to Colorado and Atlanta, and people are generally pretty nice. And if you're just honest with them and be nice with people, I feel like people are just nice spec with you. But I can see how it would be terrifying, because that's exactly how it was in the beginning. But having that icebreaker definitely helps.
And I feel like it's the times too. Back when we were kids, somebody would knock on our door and we'd just open it. We wouldn't be now I'm ducking under the couch. Who's there? Let me look out the window. Let me look at my Ring cam.
So
open the door and say hi. So I think we have that to work, that's working against us, just where it all changed, you know?
Yeah. There's been a couple times now where there's a Ring doorbell. And they're like, I just,
like
they
wave,
just,
yeah, like,
it just
hi.
Comes on. They're like, what do you want? I'm just like, I'm a photographer. They're like, what? And then they come out and I explain myself. But yeah, times are definitely different. And people always ask too, do you just knock on any door? And I definitely take precautions, and I'm not, if anything looks sketchy or I feel like I'm in danger of any kind, I definitely don't knock on a stranger's door. But you just got to take that into account before you do it.
Wow.
I love seeing the progression. I'm glad you make the videos about it too, because there's a couple things that I love about it. One is the I've just been circling around trying to get the courage to go knock on. I love that, because you can feel that in the video. I can just imagine that. And I love the progression from when you first started showing that stuff of how kind of rushed and disappointed you were in catching focus and stuff like that, and the growth that has come from that since you've been doing it for so long. Do you still feel like that, when you get out and you start setting everything up? Is it like you got to get it done to get it over with form, or have you really kind of grown into taking your time and making sure you get what you want out of that shot?
Yeah, when I first started, it was definitely just running around like a chicken with my head cut off. Everything was a blur. When I first started using large format, you're worried about light, you're worried about focus, you're worried about everything under the sun. Even if the film is loaded correctly, things like that. Mm-hmm. Luckily, I'm to the point now where I don't have to worry about that stuff as much. I still screw up an exposure every once in a while. But yeah, nowadays I really do just slow down and I'm like, all right, I got this guy out here. I have 10 sheets of film. Film is very expensive these days. So I need to really focus on getting something that's good. And the only difference really now is that I just feel, when I get done, it just feels like a blur. I don't know what just went
out of body. out of body experience.
Yeah. And then I'm like, did I expose correctly? Did I get focus? And then everything usually turns out pretty well. But it definitely, it's like I said, film prices too. It's just you're trying your best to get everything correct. And then, but I just love 4x5. I love the process. So I just put up with film prices.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
I wanted to also ask, did you gradually work up to 4x5? Did you start with 35 medium? What was your...
Well, the first photo that I saw was... Well, the first film photo that I saw was CineStill 800T, and it was on a 6x9 camera. And I was just like, whoa, why does this look so different? So I started looking into medium format for my first film camera, and I ended up renting a RB67, and then I used that for a bit, it was pretty cool. So I bought a Mamiya 645 because I was going to do like a Pentax or something like that. But people online were saying, get this because you'll get more exposures. You're going to mess up a lot. So you won't waste as much money, which definitely agree on that. So I used that for a while. Ended up selling that, and then I got a Pentax, and then I got an RZ, and then I found the work of like Alex Soth and Brian Scoopmont, yep. And I was just like, I need that, and ended up buying a 4x5 in 2020, I think, and then I've just been using that ever since. I've tried to go back to medium format, but it's just not the same for me.
Wow.
You can't beat the look. I mean, 4x5
at all.
Is so, I mean, you almost kind of get that with the Pentax and the RB. Mm-hmm. Like they kind of have that look, like if you hit it just right, or that's one regret I have. Like the times that I've pulled my 4x5 out and didn't take a portrait. Like I always chickened out because it's tough. It's just, it takes a minute. You know, everything's upside down and backwards.
Yep.
And you're
yep.
trying to explain that to people. The one time I did, the girl, I was like, okay, so when I say hold still, like you got to give me like at least 5 seconds. You know, I kind of overblew the time and I was like, okay, stand still. And they're like, oh, and like, move back. I'm like, no, like stand still. Like, don't.
Yeah. The older men, especially like very old men, when I meet someone and I photographed a man, he was like 85 years old, and I'm telling him, nice. I'm like, all right, so it's going to take me a little bit to get focus. You got to be pretty still. He's like, okay. And then they're just like, he's looking around like this and he's talking.
And
I'm like, all right, so you got to stay still for me. Just try not to move here. And he's like doing this. And now I've tried to develop a thing. If I'm photographing someone for the car project, I either push them up against the car and I'm just like, so they can't really move anywhere. You figure things out like that as you go on, but or I just photograph them from further away, or I just stop down my lens a little bit. But it can definitely be hard explaining a 4x5 to someone that has only ever seen a digital camera before in their life.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to photograph my 2-year-old with my RB the other day. The whole roll's ruined. I was like, why did I even try this?
Yeah.
Why did I even try this? It's a point and shoot only at this age, and I know this. Like,
and then you have a digital camera where you're just like this, and you get perfect focus every time, exposure.
Yeah.
Doesn't cost anything.
Or the iPhone, it's like portrait mode. It's like, I love it and hate it. Because it's like, it's way too easy, you know?
I wish iPhone photos. I see people that use their iPhones and get these amazing photographs. I shoot with it, and it looks like an iPhone photograph. Like every time.
I just don't know how.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
I follow a couple photographers who have other accounts that are just their iPhone photos. And I'm just like, you guys are killing it. And it looks like HDR every time that I take a photo.
Right.
Exactly.
I don't know.
Every time. I just don't get it.
I was going to say, do you think you'll go bigger, Brian? You think an 8x10?
I've tried 8x10 and it's just too much.
It's a whole nother.
I bought an Intrepid 8x10 a couple years ago, especially when I was really into Alex Soth and Joel Sternfeld and photographers like that. But it's just, I develop everything myself, and developing 8x10 is just a whole another thing.
Wow.
You can only do one or two sheets at a time. The film's way more, like color film is like
$25. Forget about it.
I scan everything myself, so I had to upgrade my light. I had to get, like, everything was just a step up. And for me, the quality of it and just the pros of it didn't outweigh the cons. So sold that off really quickly and just made myself focus on 4x5. And I finally got it down to a point now where I'm just using one camera, one lens, and then a color film and a black and white film.
At least when you like simplifying that, like this is your kit, at least you're not getting your way with other stuff. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I feel like at least that keeps it nice and streamlined.
Yeah. I've gone through a lot of gear, and I've been when I first started, I bought and sold so many cameras and lenses, and I think that's important, but when you finally find something, it just takes that out of the equation when you're actually making work. And then you can just focus on the person, focus on what you're actually trying to, the story that you're trying to tell.
Yeah. I'm very jealous that you're one of those people that has able to do that. Because I am like a hoarder at this point. Because, we won't go into that. But anyway.
With the new digital cameras that are coming out, though, because I do have a digital camera that I use as well. And the more work that I've been doing for assignments and stuff, I'm getting a little itch to do, to get a better digital camera. But every time that I look, I'm just like, you're doing fine right now, Brian. You don't need anything.
Yeah.
Like, just work with what you have. And it eventually washes over me and it passes. And then I can just move on from that. But it definitely pulls me in every once in a while.
I had something similar happen to me recently where I was on set and I was like, I'm not getting it. Like the low light, it's still pretty grainy, you know? And I'm like, I have the Canon EOS R. And I was like, I need the whatever is out now, the six, the seven. I can't. And then so long story short, I ended up, somebody showed me some other person's unit still photography. And I was like, oh, theirs looks exactly like mine. And this is on a huge production. So I was like, okay. And then all the photos they end up using, like, they're fine. They're perfectly fine. But it's like, if I want this tack sharp, clear image at ISO 5 billion, you know, like if I can't go higher than 1600.
Yeah,
anyway, that's the whole digital
thing. I don't mind noise anymore. Ever since I got into film, and I'm not too big on grain. I like very low ISO film, but even when I see noise now, I'm just like, it just kind of looks like grain. So it's just like, it's not a big deal to me.
Plus those cameras, like you really like, and basically shoot, you can shoot in the dark almost. It's really insane. But I feel you on the, I want to upgrade all my digital stuff too.
Especially with the...
All the cameras.
Yeah.
All the lenses on everything.
With how many come out these days, it's just, it's hard not to...
Insane.
But just got to focus on making the work.
I want to touch on your assignment stuff, but one last kind of cars and portraits question. What's like the end goal for that? Do you have kind of like a vision in sight, or are you just kind of still letting it roll until you feel something that you're...
The end goal is to make it into a book. I have messed around a little bit with sequencing things and getting figured out. I haven't reached out to anyone, but I'm in a smaller critique group with around three other photographers, and we like to show work to each other. So I've been showing work to them and trying to get feedback. And I'm definitely to the point, I mean, I've been working on this for 2 years now, and the majority of it is around St. Louis or just across the river in Illinois. And I feel like I've been down every road. I've been down every pack road. There just comes a point where you feel like you've seen everything, and I'm still trying to get more, because I did a lot of portraits, people in front of their cars. I did a lot of headshot type portraits. So now I'm just working on trying to get more detail stuff, maybe getting inside people's houses, inside their garages.
Wow.
Get stuff, get stuff like that. Like me and my buddy Carl just went out the other day. And we went out to Perry, Missouri, which is 2.5 hours away from me. And I met this guy named Al, and he just had a bunch of cars outside this little garage. And we talked a little bit, and eventually he's just like, hey, come into my house. I have this big gas pump in there in my living room. And I'm like, that's amazing. So I go in there, and just it's a normal living room, carpet floor. And then he just has this huge antique, like 8-foot gas pump in the corner of his house. And I'm just like, this is the pictures that I need now in order to tell this whole story. But so eventually I do want it to be a book, but have no idea when I'm going to be done or when or if that's even going to come into fruition. But that's the goal.
It feels like that, like where you started the process one way and then now you're kind of shifting a little bit. Is that going to make like the first half like null and void? You're like, this isn't going in the book because I didn't shoot it this way. Or do you think you're like, that could throw a whole wrench in the whole thing. That happens to me a lot with stuff.
Yeah, because I also started with a whole entire different camera system. I was shooting on medium format for a while. So then some of the photos don't really match that much. and the fact that I was still learning 4x5 when I first started. So some of the portraits, just some things are different. They're just not as precise, I guess you could say. So I only feel like probably the past year or so, I've been really focused on trying to dial in everything and do things that make it cohesive. And that's just, I talked with another friend of mine and he's like, as long as you're still going out and having fun and you feel energized, then you should continue to work on it. But as soon as you don't feel that, then maybe it's time to move on and maybe you're just done with that specific project.
Wow.
So
what about circling back to some of the shots that you're not happy about? Is that an option to go back and
reshoot?
I've done that a couple times. Most of the time people are open to it because I get everyone's phone number and I have their name down. So I have done that a couple times, and one of the portraits that I like the most is Jason and his dog Diablo. And
yes,
that was actually a time that I reached out again and met up with them and redid the portrait. Because at the time I was shooting black and white and color, and I just reached out to him and was like, can we do this again? I'm shooting everything in color. So we met up again and redid the portrait, and it turned out to be one of my favorites. So
awesome. Yeah. Cool.
That's amazing. Yeah. It's sometimes you forget, like, I can just go and reshoot this. You know, it's not like your weddings, like when you're like, you can't really.
The difference between weddings and the project that I'm working on is it's night and day, but I like it because it's so different and it just keeps you on your toes with being creative with everything. But weddings are a totally different ball game.
Yeah, I hear that. I know. I feel like I'm having so much fun. I feel like there's so much more I want to talk about. Oh, here's something. Somebody who like me is like super inspired by large format, but is terrified. Do you have any advice for people who are like, it's too much, I can't. Every time I think about picking up my Intrepid, I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing. There's nobody here to help me. Mm-hmm. I'm too scared.
I would just look at it. I mean, the first thing I would do is watch someone online like a Ben Horn or a Matt Mirage. The way they go about things, like Ben Horn, whenever he is doing his landscape photography, it's just the way he goes about it, it's so peaceful and calming. And there's only been a couple times in his videos where he seems like he's flustered or something goes wrong. And I would just try to read as much as you can and watch as much as you can beforehand. And don't be afraid of making mistakes. Like, you have an Intrepid, so I would just recommend getting a cheap film, messing up the cheap film a lot. Yeah. Buy like some Foamapan or Arista 100.
Yeah.
And just make mistakes. And I mean, there's been a gazillion times when I pull the film out of the tank and it's black or it's completely blown out. I missed focus. Like, there's been so many times where I take someone's portrait and it's just focused on their ear. And I'm like, it kind of lights a fire in you and you just want to do it better next time. And then when you finally do get it, you're just like, all right. And then on to the next thing.
Man, and you get a loop. Do you have a loop, Chris?
Yeah, I think I was like, where's my loop? That's number one. I'm like, I have to find where my loop is.
Yeah, a loop is very important.
Although I liked your pro tip with the 50 millimeter lens.
Oh,
lens.
Yeah.
I would have probably thought of that on the ride home.
I don't know where I heard that.
Like, it's too late.
I don't know where I heard that from, but that's the worst whenever you're, especially because I was in Washington or wherever I was. And I go to open my bag and it's like the one thing that you need to shoot a portrait. It's like, I don't have it. Or maybe I forget my dark cloth or something like that. It's the worst when you forget something, but luckily I don't do that too much.
I feel like I'm a worthless photographer. I don't have my loop. Come on.
Going back to the YouTube comments of one minor mistake, I went and did a 4x5 video and I forgot my shutter release cable because I was in a hurry. Oh, the sun was going down. I just wanted to get outside. Boy, the comments, because I'm all like, you know, the little shutter button on the thing. I'm like trying to get it. And everyone's just like, man, just you're an idiot. Bring a shutter. You know, it's like, okay, I know. I forgot it. I didn't want to like, geez.
Yeah, I just went to Colorado in April and we were doing a hike and I got to a point where I was like, oh, this is a beautiful scene. I'm going to take a photo right now. And then I look at my camera and my shutter cable fell off somewhere along the hike. So I'm like, oh, I'll just use my finger. It's fine. So I go to do it. And then you can literally see my finger in the photo. And I'm just like, I'm a professional. And you can see my... Yeah. It looks like someone when they're taking an iPhone photo and you can see their finger. And I'm just like, man,
yep.
Humbling.
Man. It happens. Yeah. We were talking about this on our Discord channel with our Patreons. Like, we get a blank roll and stuff happens. Like, still, you know, and it like, does. What are you going to do? Your finger's in the shot. I forgot my shutter release. Like,
yeah, I was just out a week ago and I went to take a man's portrait and I just left the lens open and just ruined a sheet of film. And he's like, did you take it? And I was like, I just ruined some film. We got to go again. And he's like, okay.
Yeah, see, that's what I'm afraid of. Like, that's like, there's so many steps. Like, you got to close down the lens, and da, 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 da. Like, is this? Did I? I gotta have to like have a checklist. To be like, okay, just you know.
Yeah, and definitely, I would focus on something like a still life, like photograph of a plant in your house, or maybe just your backyard, and just go through all the steps and just learn it, and then you can eventually move up to taking someone's portrait. And it's just. It'll still be a little nerve-wracking, but it just won't be as nerve-wracking as the first time.
Mm-hmm. That's good advice too.
It's one of those, the more you do it, it's like riding a bike type of situation. Yep. The more you do it, the more fluid you get with it, the more confidence you build. Totally. And then I kind of relate it to whiskey. Do you remember the first time you tasted whiskey, how terrible it was? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, 5 years later, you take another sip of whiskey and it's like, oh my, I was scared of this. Like, right. I was scared of that. You know? So it's just one of those things. I don't think you forget it over time. Like, it's just, you kind of got to get familiar again. Because I was doing all those Instax using the Lomo Graphlock back, and I was doing all those poppy photos with it. And I was flying through stuff, having so much fun. I was like, why don't I use this camera?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm kind of going through that same, like the whole learning experience with digital now, because I haven't used a digital camera for that much photography. So it's just like, it's so different. And the fact that with film, you overexpose most of the time. When with digital, you underexpose.
Oh, yeah.
Just even and getting used to that and having a raw file and just being able to mess with it so much. It's very liberating, but it's also very scary just because I haven't used it that much. So trying to learn digital right now and be better at that is a totally different thing as well.
I also love that you're going the other way. Like you're learning digital versus the other way, like starting on digital, learning film.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Did it a little backwards, but it all works out in the end.
I mean, that's a great segue into your assignment work. And, how did that all come about? Like it's just such a cool story I saw the video. So,
I never really thought that I would do assignment work like that, but the photographers that I did look up to and did follow along with, they did stuff like that.
Yeah.
And they would do their personal projects and then they would do either assignment work, editorial, or commercial work. And I was like, that would be amazing to get to the point where you're doing your own personal projects and then you're doing assignment stuff, preferably with 4x5 or whatever medium I was using. And I was actually listening to an interview with Erin Springer, who's a photographer in Wisconsin. And she was talking about how she got started with assignments. And she's like, I just sent a cold email out to a New York Times editor and introduced myself and just told her my story. And she reached back out and I got my first assignment. And now I do assignment work.
I love to hear that because stuff's not going to fall in your lap unless you are proactive.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So I listened to that and I was like, well, I'm going to reach out to a New York Times.
Yes.
And I did. And I didn't hear back. Which is pretty normal, I would say, but I just didn't really have the work at the time. And I was just a little more naive and just thought, oh, I'll just do this and see what happens. But then that was probably 2021 or something, but in November or October of 2022, this editor reached out to me and she just said, "I found you on Instagram. Really love your work. Would love to set up a time to chat." And I was like, "Yes, of course." And it turns out she was from Columbia, Missouri, and she went to Mizzou. So she was kind of familiar with just Midwest and St. Louis and stuff like that. Yeah. But yeah, I signed on with them and didn't have anything for like 6 months. And then my first assignment was actually documenting that tornado that happened in South Missouri. So I was kind of just thrown into everything. I had no idea what I was doing, but learned a lot with that one and then didn't have another one for a couple months. And then the last couple of weeks and couple of months, I've had like 4 or 5. So I just feel very lucky.
So cool.
And I'm learning a lot as it all unfolds. And every time out, it's just something new. And it's pretty much exactly what I wanted to do. And I'm just trying not to mess it up and trying to do my best with everything now.
Congrats. That's amazing.
Thank you.
It's got to be such a great learning experience too. I mean, just getting to deal with people and, you know, going into, especially was it a tornado or hurricane? What was it
the first one was a tornado. Yeah.
Tornado. Yeah. Just like going in and showing compassion and being with people in a situation like that to where they kind of allow you to capture them in such a vulnerable position is just.
Yeah. And I think all the jobs that you have in the past, like, even if it's a job like I had working as a cashier, it always helps you out in everything else that comes up. And being a wedding photographer, people talk shit on wedding photographers all the time, but it's like, without that, I wouldn't have felt as comfortable going in and just knowing that things only happen once and you got to get the shot.
Right.
Yep.
And it just prepares you for everything. And luckily, not every assignment has been like a tornado, like the first one.
True, true.
They've been a little more chill and just like portraits and stuff. But yeah, you learn a lot. And I've learned a lot about just how these assignments come together and working with editors and collaborating. And yeah, it's been a wonderful experience so far.
Killer.
I love that. Another inspirational moment here, Brian. I'm like, man, I want to shoot from some assignments now, dude.
And I will say, people definitely need to shoot what they want to be hired for. And
right,
I will say that I, even with something like the Analog Artisans series on YouTube that I haven't done a video in forever, I started that because nobody would hire me for portraits and I wanted to take portraits. So it was just
smart.
It's kind of an easy way in just to take portraits of people. And I was photographing people like I see other people, the people that I look up to, how they photograph people. And it just really helped me build that portfolio. And I wasn't getting paid anything. I wasn't getting anything in return besides just meeting with people and getting that small $20 YouTube ad revenue check in the mail. But it just, shoot what you want to get paid for. And I even said that with weddings when I first started, because nobody was hiring me for weddings. So I had to do weddings for free or for cheap. And you just got to do what you got to do to get the work. And I'm not against like doing things for exposure. And I know people frown on that, but if you look at it and you can benefit from it in some way, and you don't have to sell yourself completely, like, I say go for it and just see what happens. And it's all a learning experience in the end anyway. So
I couldn't agree more, because I feel like exposure, if you're a National Geographic photographer, or if you've been photographing weddings for 30 years, I feel like exposure for when you're like a successful photographer is where the complaint is. When you're just starting to come up and learning, you have to do that stuff to learn. I mean, that's again, that's how I got to do portrait shoots or to shoot weddings. I did the crap for free before I even started, or for a favor for a buddy, or, you know, that's a huge part of it. And again, like you said, like, shoot what you want your work to be, what you want to be working for. That's so important. And that's how I ever, like, I'm not a paid photographer, so I can't really talk much on it. But like, the times I have been compensated for work that I've done and people hired me, it was, I mean, unless it's like my boss now that wants me to take eBay pictures. A little different.
Yeah. And I'm not saying too, like, just take any worth you can get all the time for free.
Oh,
like,
yeah. Yeah.
Just think about it. Look at it from a bigger perspective. And if you can gain something out of it, then by all means, like, there was one wedding where I did that. The girl was just like, my budget's $400. And this was back when I was charging a lot more. And
yeah,
but I knew that she would share my work. I knew that she would get my name out there. So I did it. And then it led to 5, 6, 7, 8 weddings that we did the following year. Right. So it's just like, if you look at it from a big perspective and don't be stupid about it, then you can definitely do some work for free and be fine.
I know. Amen. It's like a catch-22, especially with the industry that I'm trying to get into with the on-set photography. It's like you can't, especially because there's the union I'm trying to get into. It's like you can't get hired if you're not in the union. And I can't get in the union because I can't get hired because it's like the circle, you know? But I just had coffee with someone who's graduating college and they wanted to get into set photography, among other things. Mm-hmm. And at first I was like, you can't do it for free. And I was like, wait, you're not going to be able to do it unless you do it for free in the beginning, because
yeah.
No, if you don't have anything to show, you know, like, here's my work, people, what are you supposed to do? So I was like, never mind. I totally did a lot of stuff for free in the beginning, and that's how it led to this and this and this and this is. But I'm just, you know, when you get to a point where, you know, knowing your worth is a whole nother conversation separate from this, but like, to get in the door, you're going to have to do the low paid, no paid work, at least to build up your portfolio, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If I was only doing work that I got paid for like 3 or 4 years ago, I would have no work now because nobody would hire me. So it's you got to do what you got to do.
It's a tricky path forward, you know?
Yeah. Especially now. I was listening to a podcast with Mark Mahaney, who is a crazy photographer, but he's a little bit older.
Oh, yeah.
He's like I think he's around 40 or 45, but he was talking about how he couldn't imagine like trying to start a career now. And yeah, it's just time, even since I began 4 or 5 years ago, it's crazy how things have changed and how different it is. And the attention spans of people and just how fast everything is. But I try to stick to what I think's important and just hope that everyone else. I don't know. It's hard to imagine what it's going to be like, but I just try to do what I do and just hopefully it all plays out well in the end.
It's working so far.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know about the YouTube thing anymore, but YouTube's a whole different thing.
Oh,
YouTube's
totally
crazy. We'll be right back with listener question for Brian right after this message from our sponsor.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight,
It's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Just wanted to pop in here quick and let you guys know about our Patreon-only Develop and Hang Nights. Now, we've done a bunch of these already. They're a ton of fun. We talk shop. We also try to get a former guest for these. Like we always say, Patreon is the best way to support the show. If that sounds like something you're interested in, head over to patreon.com/analogtalk. Thanks, guys.
All right, guys, this is a part of the show where we take a question from one of our listeners. And this week's question comes from Dig Dug Photo on Instagram. And they ask, what was the inspiration for the title of your project, Articles of Virtue? It's a great name. Great name.
So with, I was honestly just trying to find something that when I would search it, not a lot would come up. And I don't know.
Oh, smart.
I don't know exactly what I searched. I think I was just searching about antiques and mementos and something along that line, just like a synonym or something of that nature of that. But Articles of Virtue popped up and I thought it sounded pretty cool. And when I would search it, the only thing that would pop up is like the definition of it. So I was like, well, if people search that in the future, then this project will pop up. But
oh, that's such a interesting way of thinking about a title.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not even exactly sure. I know the actual definition of it just has to do with things that remind you of the past, antiques.
Yeah.
And just with the project and the older cars and going into people's garages, and they always talk about things from the past and they always show me these little mementos that remind them of the past. So I just thought that would be perfect. And it just kind of stuck. I thought about it in the very beginning, and it just, I haven't really strayed too far from that. So now it's just what it's called.
It's it. That's stuck now at this point. Totally.
See, it's funny. I just love it. Every episode, I always relate so much to the guest because it's, you know, we're all in this thing kind of together type situation. Uh-huh. And just hearing you like putting in other words to find other words. I love that. Like I'll come up with a title and I'm like, damn, that's so basic for this. I need to, what is another word for, that's how I came up with homespun for my first zine I did forever ago. I was looking up what is like a hometown type feeling situation, but you're not from the area. Like, you know, it's just, I love researching stuff like that. And it's just another great way to learn words.
Uh-huh.
How fun are words? They're great.
Yeah. For a while, whenever I would talk with people, the people that I was photographing, they would, more often than not, they would, the subject of like just death and legacy would come up. So for a while, I was like thinking about a title. It was called Red Line of Time, just because like a red line with a car and then time just dying and moving on. Uh-huh. But
yeah,
I thought it was a little too on the nose and a little too morbid. So I just moved on from that and stuck with the Articles of Virtue.
I like that it has a name too, that you can say to the people. I'm sure that kind of eases a little bit of there, where you're not just like, oh, I don't have a title. I have no information.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
I'm
true,
just,
true,
a,
true.
You know, it kind of gives a little more substance to talking these folks into doing this.
Yeah. In the beginning, it was a little rough because I didn't have much work for it. And they'd be like, can I see like a sample? I'm just like, sure. And I just show like
as soon as I get this developed, I'll show you.
I show like one portrait and they're like, okay. But now when I tell them, I'm like, I'm working on this photography. It's going to be a book potentially. If you want to see some work, here's the work. And they're just like, oh, okay. So you're not some creep who's just asking me for a portrait, knocking on my door. Oh, so cool.
Yeah.
I also think it needs to, when the book comes out, it needs to be a show as well. You got to hang these portraits up big.
I definitely want that to be a thing. I haven't really had my prints hung up anywhere or been in a gallery or anything like that, but that is definitely something that I would like in my future. But the pathways for that are very specific, so we're just trying to stay the path right now and just see where it takes me.
Smart.
Yeah, it's great.
One last little thing on that. Were there any of the people that you shot that have gone back and watched like the YouTube video of it and commented or anything like that?
I did. Well, the second to last video, it's not the car, well, it is the car project, Franklin, in his video, the gentleman that I photographed in his house, and he was a pianist. He went back and watched it, and we've been in touch, and he was just like, I'm sitting here in tears watching this and reading all the comments.
Aww.
And
yes.
I was just like, that's what I want to hear. And it's like,
yeah,
you can have one comment like that from one person, and it means more than any amount of attention or comments that you can get.
Absolutely.
On any other video online.
100%. Okay, so the next part of this segment is we ask you the all-time, what's your favorite desert island camera, something you can't live without. Mm-hmm. We have a feeling, but we want to hear you say it.
I forgot. I'm wearing the hoodie right now.
Don't forget, this is a magical desert island. It has unlimited supply of film, batteries, repair, you need. Photo lab.
That's amazing. Well, it's, yeah, Chamonix 4x5. It's the first one that they made. I've used a lot of 4x5s. I've used Wista's Toyo, Horseman, Speed Graphics, Intrepids. And this thing just, it works. It's simple. There's no bells and whistles. It just does its job. And the lens that I use is a Schneider Zenitar 135. Mm-hmm. I would use that. And then I would use Portra 160, and it would just, I would be set for, well, I'd probably have black and white too, because I do like black and white. And wait, does this desert island have a dark room and everything, and I can print?
Yeah, mm-hmm. It has everything. Yep.
Okay.
Yep. No limitations.
Yep.
Yeah.
Definitely doing black and white then. I've never printed color, but that would be cool as well. So maybe I'd have a dark room with color, black and white printing. I would be set for life.
I love it.
Yeah.
What do those go for nowadays? Are they like crazy?
Chamonix. I've seen them pop up for, the one that I have is sometimes around 700 to like 900 used. But I mean, I've had mine for 3 years now, and just nothing has gone wrong. It's just like it has been since day one. And I don't see it breaking or having anything wrong with it in the near future.
So you like physically wear it out.
Yeah. And once that happens, I'll just buy another one used, and then I'll have that one. So
there you go, Chris. Cool. You can get yourself one.
I know. I was like, my Intrepid, I got to get something better.
Intrepids, I will say Intrepids are nice to just get the feel for it. And
yeah,
I've had an Intrepid 4x5 and I've had an Intrepid 8x10, and they're just, I've had a lot of problems, and I know a lot of people that have had a lot of problems, and the customer service isn't always the best. So,
right.
Yeah, it's hard for me to recommend them, but
yep,
they're good to learn on. Really good.
Yeah, it's definitely a good entryway, you know, an entry, like getting it, like just starting out, the price point is not like, oh my God, you know.
Yeah, and the movements and everything, it's all the same. It's just,
right.
The more expensive ones are just going to be built better.
Nice.
Better.
Yeah.
Yep.
So we have a feeling you're not lusting after anything at the moment.
Hey, we don't know.
I feel like you're pretty.
We don't know.
Okay, you're right. Why should I shouldn't make that assumption. Is there anything you're dreaming of? Anything? What's your eBay search history look like right now? Are you down the rabbit holes?
My eBay search history,
scandalous.
I'm currently in the... I'm trying to find a cheap 16x20 darkroom easel. I know that's not...
Oh, yeah.
But those things...
Wow.
Those things are pretty pricey. But cameras, I've been debating about stepping into medium format digital, or just having a medium format film camera, just because with assignment work and the turnaround, it's very hard to shoot color 4x5 and then have it turned around in time to get it sent out.
Yeah.
Because if I send it to this lab that I sent to in Kansas, the absolute quickest I can get it back is like 4 days, which is insane. So medium format film, there's a local lab here in St. Louis, and they can do it like same day or have it to me the next day.
Right.
So I've been debating that, but I don't know. Every time that I think about buying something, I'm just like, I want to. But then I'm like, it's not gonna solve anything for me. So I just go back to
Yeah.
I try my best. I don't know if you guys develop color film at home.
No.
I do.
He does. Yeah.
I just can't get it right. I don't know what the deal is, but I have these assignments and I'm like, I'm going to shoot color 4x5 and I'm going to get it like done super quick and then send it out. And then I'm sitting there for 2 hours trying to edit the film because I screwed something up in developing. So yeah, that's my eBay wish list.
That's good stuff though. Yeah. I mean, it makes sense. I didn't realize that you got rid of the Pentax. I thought you still had it.
Yeah, that's the one that if I were to buy another one, it would either be that or an RZ because, like I said, I used that in the past and I really liked it. But yeah, I sold the Pentax just because it sat around a lot and I just, I can't stand having a camera just sit there and not be used, but... It would be nice to have something to use like that.
Yeah, Chris is the opposite.
Jeez. I'm like cringing over here. Jeez. Like, yeah.
Oh, well, there's nothing wrong with just having a beautiful, like when I first bought my Chamonix, I actually had it sitting out just on out and about.
Yeah.
And
they're beautiful.
Just,
I mean.
Oh, yeah. Ugh. And people are just, they always comment on the red bellows and I'm just like, that's my baby. I don't have a name. Do you guys like name your cameras?
I haven't. No.
Okay.
They're definitely all girls. That's for sure.
Right.
Those are my girls on the shelf over there.
Maybe mine should be like a 80 year old man just because I photograph.
They're
a
all golden men. Right. In their 80s. Yep. I think I should do the same. I could see them being old men. I'm the same as Chris. I do let go of cameras to usually get something else that I want. Like if I have if I have a gold mine sitting there, there's no sense in saving it when I want something else, you know? So, but I live in regret. Oh, dude, I live in regret. I let go of my M3. I let go of my Pentax 6.7. I let go of my Fujis. I'm a moron, but I got a bunch of other toys out of it, so it's okay.
I feel like the M3 is the one that haunts you the most. I should have talked you out of that.
I'm miserable about that every day.
I shouldn't. Yeah.
I mean, Leicas are a little different because you can buy and sell those, but I've definitely noticed the past couple months that stuff, if I go to sell it, it's sitting for a while because people just not.
It slowed down.
They can't do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had a couple 4x5 lenses and I was like, I'll buy it just to test out and then I can sell it. And then I ended up selling it for like $200 less because nobody would buy it. And I'm just like,
I know. That's what happens to me every time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's kind of a good thing though, if you're looking, because you could be like, I'll give you $200 less.
Yeah.
People are usually like, how many stories do you hear? I'm like I just sent an offer on eBay and they accepted it.
Mm.
Yeah.
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 You know?
Yeah.
Interesting time.
Gear is fun.
Yep.
But also a crutch. And miserable at the same time. I literally have an M3 double stroke up on my other screen.
Yes.
Like, you guys are on this screen. The M3 is over here. I'm like, I really should have...
Ready to purchase or just...
No, but I like to think about purchasing it every once in a while. I definitely have to get rid of... I went through like a huge guitar phase. I have so many guitars I got to sell. And they're worth like a Leica. So I could easily, you know, I just need to... I need, there is the mechanical, not to go into it, but the mechanical Leicas are just divine. Like they feel, I have an M7. I'm never getting rid of it. You know, it's my ride or die. It's my daily driver. I just won't get rid of it. But there's nothing that feels like an old school, like 50s Leica. Like it just feels right. It feels like a sports car. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not a car head, so I have no idea if it feels like a sports car, but like that's what I'm
imagining.
I've only held a M6 like one time and I was like, yeah, this thing is built like really, really well. You can tell.
Yeah. I remember the first time I handed my husband my M4, he was like, whoa. Just because like he was just all my point and shoots and stuff. And he was just like, this is nice. And I was like, I know.
Yeah. I mean, I can talk all day about how gear is not important and stuff, but it's like secretly deep down, it's like I can talk all day about gear. It's just like I don't want that to be the center point of everything that I do on YouTube.
We always preface like, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Yeah. It doesn't matter.
Little asterisk next to
it. Yeah. Everyone loves it.
Yeah. It's just another fun part of it. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Well, Brian, this has been fantastic. I want to tell you, if you're ever in Connecticut, my dad has a 56 Chevy station wagon, and I would love for you to take his portrait.
That would be amazing.
I love that.
I'm trying to get up to the Northeast. I've never been past Cleveland. So how close is that, or how close is Connecticut to New York?
It's like a 2-hour train ride.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm hoping, I entered this contest and I got like, I was like a finalist for it. And I have no clue if this is even going to happen, but they mentioned that there's like a show in New York. So I'm trying to get to that. And then I want to visit like a friend in Philadelphia and then maybe just go where everyone else is.
Yeah.
So I definitely want to see the Northeast though, because I feel like there's just a lot of stuff up there that is photographable.
He also has a Alfa Romeo convertible. I don't know what year that. Those are my grandpa's cars. I don't remember if that's like a 63 or something. It's red.
I'm down for it's anything. Nice. That would be amazing.
I love it. This is getting set up now.
Yeah. My dad's like, "Do what now?" I'm like, "Yeah, friend Brian's gonna come. go out there with the."
He's like, "I just got to stand in front of it, or what's going
on?" Yeah, that's it. Real easy. That kind of brings me. This is the last thing. The project. Are you plan on traveling and expanding and like seeing other parts of the country with this project? I hope so.
Yeah. So I've been during this whole thing. I've been out to Colorado, and then I've done some in like Illinois. Like St. Louis is just where I'm from. It's like 15 minutes south of downtown St. Louis, so it's very urban. Yeah, I like getting out to more rural places. When I was in Colorado, it's just, it's hard when you show up to a place and then you're just like, all right, I'm going to knock on doors and
you're only
there for a little bit and you want to do like other things like hike and go to restaurants and do actual touristy stuff.
Relax.
But I do feel like I might have to take a road trip of some sorts, and whether that's like Northeast a little bit or going through like Kansas, like driving out to like Denver or something and driving back. I definitely want to see different parts of the US because I have like the whole entire Midwest on lockdown, I guess you could say. That's another thing with shooting for this. It's like you can only drive around so much and you try to switch things up. So I'm always trying to go to like a different part of Illinois or Missouri and just trying to switch up the environment a little bit. But it's tough when you're trying to find the time for it, and then you're trying to get there when the light's good, and then when you finally knock on a door, someone might say no or someone doesn't answer. So it's just like a timing thing. And then 99% of the time I'm going out and I'm not taking a single photo just because it doesn't come together. When it finally does come together, it's like, all right, now I have to take the portrait. Now I have to make the work. And it's just like, there's this pressure. Yeah. And then, it's a lot, but it's fun. And thankfully I like driving, and I just put on a podcast and just listen to music and drive around and just look for interesting.
It's like thrill of the hunt almost.
Yeah. I can definitely see how I've never done street photography before. But it's the same in a way. Street photographers are looking for that on the street. I'm driving around and looking for cars or interesting people. So I can definitely, it's kind of the same feeling, but just different avenues, I guess.
Have you ever thought about, so we used to go to a lot of car shows growing up because my dad would enter the cars in these car shows. Have you ever done that? Like spent a Saturday at a car show just passing out business cards?
I thought about that in the beginning. Because there's this, like 15 minutes from St. Louis, there's a Sonic drive-in, and every Friday from 4 to sundown, there's a huge car show there.
Cool.
And I walked around there, and there are a lot of interesting people, but I've noticed in the past, whenever I try to set something up with someone, they act differently, and it becomes more of like a shoot, I guess, instead of just
like, let me put on my nice outfit, get my hair did. Wow, interesting.
I mentioned that too, and when I was talking about assignment work, because that's a little bit of the same thing. Whenever I'm meeting people to take their portrait for an assignment, they're like, oh, Brian's come in, he's from this big publication, and I have to get super done up, and they're kind of stiff just because they know that it's going to be either published or online somewhere. Whereas when I knock on someone's door for the car project, they're just like, oh yeah, some guy's wants to take my portrait. It might be a book one day.
I guess I'll walk outside. Yeah.
Yeah. I just took a photo of this guy named Al, and he was just shoeless outside, just in socks.
Yes.
And I'm just like, he's like, do you want me to put on shoes? I'm like, no, you're perfect just like that. That's exactly how I want it.
Yeah. But
yeah, assignment work, people are very on guard, and you have to work with them a lot more in order to loosen them up and get them comfortable.
That makes so much sense to me. Yeah.
Interesting. I never thought about that. I thought it was like a gold mine, a car show. You just walk around and ask, you'll have like 50 people ready to go.
Yeah. I did do that. And then a lot of people too that I talk to and meet for this, they're just like, yeah, I got a guy who it usually is just like, I know a guy. And then I'm just like, all right, I'm going here. And then, but yeah, meeting up with people, it's always hit and miss with scheduling things.
I can't wait to see where this all goes in the future. We'll be keeping an eye on you.
Definitely. Yeah.
If the book is ever done.
No, when the book is ever done, it will be done. Brian, thank you for joining us. Again, we feel like this is overdue. So glad you took the time to chat with us today.
Where can
everybody check out your channel, plug your Instagram, whatever you want to plug, go right ahead.
It's just Brian Birks, BryanBirks, pretty much everywhere. Yeah, Instagram, YouTube. Used to have Twitter, but that's not a thing anymore, so.
Yeah.
Mm-mm. Or X, I should say.
Yeah, X.
Yuck.
But yeah, Brian Birks everywhere.
Cool. Awesome. Timothy, where are you?
Instagram, Threads, at Timothy Makeups, a bunch of old film photography YouTube stuff. Easiest way to find that, just go to the search bar, type in Timothy Makeups. I just paid for another year of my Squarespace website. It's just timothymakeups.com. That's it for me. Chris, where are you?
So I am same crispy photo on all the things. YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, Threads. Yeah, Threads. And I also just kind of rearranged my website and put new gallery of the show I'm working on. So if you'd like to check that out, it's my whole name, ChristineBartolucci.com. Yay.
Awesome.
Yay. Brian, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. This has been fantastic.
Thank you, guys. I really appreciate you reaching out. And I just, I enjoy what you guys do. That's pretty much what I listen to when I'm driving around is you guys. Podcasts, so
thank you.
Keep it up.
Thank you.
Definitely. All right, guys. We'll see you in the next one.
Bye.
Bye.
All right. First off, Chris and I would love to thank Brian for coming on the show. Like Chris said at the beginning, long time coming. We love your work. So glad we got to hang out and chat and just talk about all your projects and all the awesome stuff you have going on. We can't wait to see what the future holds for you, man. We just love what you're doing. Thanks, Brian. That's going to take us to Patreon. Head over to patreon.com/analogtalk for only $1. You can get the show 2 days early. We also have our Patreon-only develop and hang nights over there, a bunch of stuff in the archives, and a Discord link. If that sounds like something you're interested in, again, like I said, patreon.com/analogtalk. Patreon is the best way to support the show. All right, that's it. Wrapping up the episode. Guys, thanks for listening. Thanks for hanging out. Thanks for all the support. We love you guys. We will see you next week with an all-new episode. Later.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.